subject of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Julie Eldridge from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading to you from the Governor Moorhead School Alumni Connection newsletter for the spring edition of 2025. And this from the President's Corner by Dr. Ricky Scott. As president of our association, I wish to express my hope that all is well with you and your family, and that you are looking forward to spring and all that it holds for you and our association members. First, let me report that we had a successful winter meeting with several presentations related to self-care and DSB updates on its programs and services. In addition, a report pertaining to the upcoming convention was provided to us. Second, I also report to you the ongoing efforts to advance accessibility to pedestrian street crossings and our efforts to advance the passage of the White Cane Bill in our General Assembly to include a Class 2 misdemeanor for those that violate it. Third, we continue to advocate for the students at GMS through my service on the Board of Trustees that now govern GMS. Lastly, let me express my thanks and appreciation to you for your membership and service to our association. As I close, I encourage you to continue to work to advance the work of our association through your membership and service on committees. And now for the committee reports. Here's the convention report. GMSAA I reunion / convention, February 16th of 2025. The Governor Moorhead School reunion / convention will be held on August 1st through August 3rd. We will be staying at Homewood Suites, Crabtree, Raleigh. The address is 5400 Homewood Banks Drive, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27612. The room rates are $129 plus tax. There is a $75 incidental fee just in case the room is damaged, but you will get it back if the room is intact. The cost for the reunion is $60 for annual members, $50 for lifetime members, and $90 for guests. In order to join or renew your membership, it's $20. However, for lifetime members, you do not need to pay at all. More details related to the reunion will be coming soon. And that's from the reunion committee, Susan Patterson, chairman, phone number 919-798-2222. Email missp2015@gmail.com. Marjorie Hurd, phone number 919-665-7206. Her email is marjorie.hurd3, and Marjorie is M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E dot H-E-A-R-D 3 at gmail.com. And then there's Annie Burris. Her phone number is 704-307-7560. With an email address of annburris3000@gmail.com. And lastly, Janie Garland, phone number 984-206-9883, and an email purplebear137@hotmail.com. And here's the Resource Development Committee report. Hello, members and friends of the Governor Moorhead Alumni Association. This year, the Resource and Development Committee is asking that everyone participate in our fundraising activity that we are calling the Battle of the Months. Each person is asked to raise money or donate their own money to this cause. You will turn in your money to the captain of your birthday month at our reunion in August. If you are not going to attend this event this year, we still need your help. The month that raises the most money will have bragging rights as winners of the battle. If you are interested in being the captain of your birthday month, please call Margaret Carter at 919-856-0034 to sign up. Your task will be to collect and count money on Friday night at the reunion and convention. Please remember that the funds that we raise will be used to help keep our individual costs down every year that we get together for our August and January meetings. We are looking for willing, positive people who can enjoy a friendly competition to raise money for positive causes. Thank you in advance for your help. If there are any questions, call me, your Resource and Development Committee Chairperson, Margaret Carter. And again, her phone number is 919-856-0034. This from the Legislative Advocacy Committee Report. Legislative Report for GMSAA, Winter 2025. Last January, I traveled to Washington, D.C. for the Washington Seminar, which is conducted by the National Federation of the Blind. As the state legislative chairperson for the National Federation of the Blind of North Carolina, or NFBNC, I scheduled the visits to both our senators and representatives of our state. While we campaigned on such issues as website accessibility and accessible medical devices, it was felt that our time would be well spent in asking our senators and representatives to protect and support the laws that support us as disabled citizens of America. Thus, we asked our Congress to stand up for the Rehabilitation Act 1973, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act 1975, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, of 1990. Without the above laws, any legislation that we have or will have passed as disabled people will mean little. These laws are the backbone for the equality and rights that we have. Another legislative act that the National Federation of the Blind hopes to be enacted into law is the Blind Americans Return to Work Act. This law would make it more possible for blind people to earn more money without having their Social Security benefits threatened. Representative Pete Sessions of Texas has sponsored and signed on to this act. Let us hope that this act, along with the above ones, will become law as we strive for greater freedom and integration in society. In addition, at the state level, Association and Raleigh-Wake Council of the Blind members, as well as NC Council of the Blind members, are pursuing legislation related to the White Cane Law, which would include a Class II misdemeanor charge for violators. Respectfully submitted, Robert Parrish, Legislative Chair, GMSAA. Communications Committee Report by Dr. Ricky Scott. Currently, I serve as chairman of our Communications Committee with the primary responsibility of producing our quarterly newsletter. To that end, I report that the newsletter has been provided primarily through email. Also, NC Reading Service has provided a podcast of our newsletter. I am happy to announce that the audio podcast of our alumni connection is now available on our website at www.gmsaai.org and on NFB Newsline. To access the newsletter through NFB Newsline, you must be a member. To register for NFB Newsline, you must call the NC Accessible Books and Library Services at 919-733-4376 to get registered for NFB Newsline. Otherwise, you can call Newsline at 888-882-1629. The Alumni Connection is under the North Carolina Channel under Option 2. Then select Option 3. Let me know if you have any questions. Call 919-673-8300 or email at rickyscott09@gmail.com. GMS Board of Trustees Update. Governor Moorhead School Board of Trustees Update. The Board of Trustees of Governor Moorhead School is currently finalizing the transition of the school from the Department of Public Instruction to an independent state agency. In other words, the school itself will be a state agency in the coming months. As part of this ongoing transition, the Board of Trustees has appointed a policy committee composed of board members and school staff to develop a series of school policies. Further, The board continues to work with the Department of Health and Human Services to transfer maintenance staff and equipment for the care and support of the school's facilities and grounds. Finally, the board is pleased to share that Gouverneur Moorhead School has a school resource officer, or a police officer, from State Capitol Police assigned to serve the campus during regular school hours. This is in addition to the campus security officers that are already provided through State Capitol Police. In December of 2024, State Bill 382 was enacted by the North Carolina General Assembly. This legislation was originally vetoed by the governor, but the General Assembly overrode the veto and the legislation became law. This bill includes several provisions that impact the governance and transition of Gouverneur Moorhead School. First, the Gouverneur Moorhead preschool that is currently housed at the Department of Public Instruction will transition back to become part of Gouverneur Moorhead School. The Gouverneur Moorhead preschool serves children from birth to age 5 throughout the state. Second, the Department of Administration will provide support to the school in terms of finance, human resources, and purchasing. Next, the title of the school director has been changed to superintendent. This superintendent has the same authority and duties as the superintendent of any other school district. Further, the admissions criteria has been clarified to allow for applications to be submitted directly from a parent or a school district. A committee of school staff reviews applications for admission. The superintendent makes the final admission decision. Parents who are unsatisfied with the decision of the superintendent can appeal to the Board of Trustees. Finally, the legislation directs that all buildings and grounds on the Gouverneur Moorhead School campus be transferred to Gouverneur Moorhead School and be under the control of the Board of Trustees. Previously, buildings and grounds on the campus utilized by the Department of Health and Human Services were under their control. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to Board Chair Dr. Alan Chase at alan.chase@gms.k12.nc.us. Sincerely, Alan Chase, ED, JD, Board Chair. And here are some informational articles. Social Security change. Changes to accessing our in-person services. This is dated Wednesday, November 13th, 2024. Dear colleague, in our ongoing commitment to serve the public more efficiently, we are expanding appointment-based services at our local Social Security offices. By scheduling appointments, we will aim to reduce wait times, streamline service delivery, and improve the overall customer experience. Nearly 400 field offices have already moved to appointment-based service this year. These offices have seen significant improvements in wait times due to more efficient and helpful visitor experiences and increases in the number of customers able to complete their business online. We are implementing appointment-based services nationwide in two phases. The first phase is a transition period now through January 5th of 2025. The purpose of this transition period is to educate our customers about needing to schedule an appointment for SSA services. As a reminder, many of our services can be provided via phone with an appointment and do not require a customer to walk into an office for service. Effective January 6th, 2025, we will require customers to schedule an appointment for service in our field offices, including requests for Social Security cards. We encourage customers to become accustomed to our online services, where many transactions can be completed conveniently and securely, and automated services available on our national 800 number at 1-800-772-1213. Customers who are not able to handle their business online or with the automated options may call their local Social Security office or our national 800 number to schedule an appointment. We want to make clear that we will not turn people away for service who are unable to make an appointment or do not want to make an appointment. For example, members of vulnerable populations, military personnel, people with terminal illnesses, and individuals with other situations requiring immediate or specialized attention may still walk in for service at our field offices. Some of our offices also have minimal to no wait times, and they will still serve customers who walk in. We appreciate your partnership in sharing this information and helping our customers through this transition. Thank you for your continued support as we work together to improve service accessibility and responsiveness. Sincerely, Dawn Bistry, Associate Commissioner, Office of Strategic and Digital Communications. And there's an email, oea.net.post@ssa.gov. Here's some Social Security legislation. Social Security benefits to change under new bill. Here's who's impacted. Published January 15, 2025 at 2:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Updated January 17, 2025 at 12:55 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. New legislation would allow disabled Americans to marry without risking the loss of Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, payments. The bill, introduced by U.S. Senators Jerry Moran, Republican of Kansas, and Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Maryland, aims to remove the penalty on disability benefits for SSI recipients who choose to marry. At present, the Social Security Act counts the money and property of those marrying SSI recipients when assessing eligibility. Those with SSI benefits who marry have their spouse's income and resources factored into their benefits, which can reduce their payments or fully eliminate them due to ineligibility. What's more, when two individuals receiving SSI benefits marry with no additional income, benefits amount to 25% less than the total they would receive if they were living together but not as husband and wife, according to the Department of Labor's Office of Disability and Income Assistance Policy. I'm working alongside Senator Moran to build support for this legislation that will help people with disabilities strengthen their financial security while supporting their freedom to marry. As a common sense, bipartisan solution, we'll be looking for opportunities to pass this bill, and I'm confident in its prospects, Senator Chris Van Hollen told Newsweek. Currently, if a person is disabled and relies on Social Security income, they can receive a maximum benefit of $943 per month, and their countable assets cannot exceed $2,000. Kristen Petersmark, president and founder of New Horizon Retirement Solutions, told Newsweek. However, if the individual gets married and both spouses rely on Social Security, their combined monthly income benefit is reduced by 25%, and the maximum countable assets of both spouses cannot exceed $3,000. The legislation eliminating the marriage penalty in SSI Act would rule out a spouse's income and resources when assessing SSI benefit eligibility and exclude marital status when determining SSI benefit amounts for disabled adults or those with diagnosed intellectual or developmental disabilities, according to the text of the bill obtained by Newsweek. I have anecdotal evidence of some couples so desperate that they have divorced so that the more needy spouse can receive low-income benefits, Mary Johnson, an independent Social Security and Medicare policy analyst, told Newsweek. If passed, disabled Americans would be free to marry without the potential of losing their SSI benefits. The legislation was first introduced on December 23, 2024, and referred to the Senate Committee. Referred to the Senate Committee on Finance on January 13, 2025. It's endorsed by the Autism Society of America, Autism Speaks, Global Down Syndrome Foundation, Muscular Dystrophy Association, National Down Syndrome Congress, and National Down Syndrome Society. The bipartisan bill is S-73 and is the SSI Marriage Penalty Bill. Please make contact with your senators and representatives to ask for their support in making this bill law. So muzzled. Thousands of civil rights investigations halted under Trump. Jennifer Smith Richards, ProPublica, and Jody S. Cohen, February 14th, 2025. In the 3.5 weeks since Donald Trump returned to the presidency, investigations by the agency that handles allegations of civil rights violations in the nation's schools and colleges have ground to a halt. At the same time, there has been a dramatic drop in the number of new cases opened by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, and the few that attorneys have been directed to investigate reflect some of Trump's priorities: getting rid of gender-neutral bathrooms, banning transgender athletes from participating in women's sports, and alleged anti-Semitism or discrimination against white students. The OCR has opened about 20 new investigations since Trump's inauguration, sources inside the department told ProPublica, a low number compared with similar periods in previous years. During the first 3 weeks of the Biden administration, for instance, the office opened about 110 new investigations into discrimination based on race, gender, national origin, or disability, the office's historic priorities. More than 250 new cases were opened in the same time period last year. Historically, the bulk of investigations in the office have been launched after students or their families file complaints. Since Trump took office, the focus has shifted to directed investigations, meaning that the Trump administration has ordered those inquiries. We have not been able to open any investigations that come from the public, said one longtime OCR attorney who asked not to be named for fear of losing their job. Several employees told ProPublica that they have been told not to communicate with the students, families, and schools involved in cases launched in previous administrations, and to cancel scheduled meetings and mediations. We've been essentially muzzled, the attorney said. A spokesperson for the Education Department did not respond to requests for comment. Even though new case openings typically slow during a presidential transition as new political appointees gain their footing and set priorities, it is not typical for it all to stop. Under the first Trump administration, of course things shifted and there were changes, but we never had this gag order on us, said another OCR attorney, who also asked not to be named. The shift at the OCR comes as Trump has called the Education Department a con job and is expected to issue an executive order that the department be dismantled. In her confirmation hearing on Thursday, Trump's nominee to be Education Secretary, Linda McMahon, said she hadn't decided whether to cut funding to the OCR, as Republicans have called for. This week, the Trump administration terminated more than $900 million in contracts that mostly focused on education research and data on learning and the country's schools. The cuts were made at the behest of Elon Musk's cost-cutting crew, known as the Department of Government Efficiency, which said it also ended dozens of training grants for educators that it deemed wasteful. Since 1979, the department's civil rights arm has worked to enforce the nation's anti-discrimination laws in schools. It operates under a congressional mandate to uphold the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as well as the federal laws that prohibit discriminating against students because of gender or disability. About 12,000 complaints were under investigation when Trump took office. The largest share of pending complaints, about 6,000, are related to students with disabilities who feel they've been mistreated or unfairly denied help at school, according to a ProPublica analysis of department data. Investigators were pursuing about 3,200 active complaints of racial discrimination, including unfair discipline and racial harassment. In addition, roughly 1,000 complaints were specific to sexual harassment or sexual violence, the analysis found. The remainder concern a range of discrimination claims. Students and families often turn to the OCR after they feel their concerns have not been addressed by their school districts. The process is free, which means even if families can't afford a lawyer to pursue a lawsuit, they may still get relief access to disability services or increased safety at school, for example. When the OCR finds evidence of discrimination, it can force a school district or college to change its policies or provide service to a student, and it sometimes monitors the institutions to make sure they comply. Last fall, for example, the OCR concluded that a rural Pennsylvania school district had failed to protect black students from racist taunts and harassment by a group of white students. White students in the Norwin school district had circulated a photo of themselves labeled Cool Kids Club, and that Cool Kids Club was spelled all with K's, wore Confederate flag clothing, told a black student to go pick cotton, and used racial epithets, investigators found. District officials initially said they saw no problem with some of the white students' behavior and did not believe the students had created a racially hostile environment. But the OCR's findings and corrective action required the district to study several years of racial harassment complaints and undergo training on how to better respond to racial conflict in the district. The department's power to hold schools accountable when they fail to protect students and provide relief in real time while a student is still in school makes its work urgent, civil rights attorneys and department staff said. About 600 of the education department's roughly 4,000 employees work in the OCR, either at the Washington headquarters or one of 12 regional offices. At least 74 department employees, some of whom had taken diversity training, have been placed on administrative leave, according to Sharia Smith, an OCR attorney and president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 252, a union that represents non-management education department employees. Smith said 15 of those workers on leave are from the OCR. 50 newer education department employees were fired Wednesday, she said, including 3 from the OCR. The one thing that is clear right now is we have a complete disruption of the services we provide and are hearing from our stakeholders, Smith said, citing as an example a Kentucky family reaching out to silenced OCR workers to plead for answers about the complaint they'd made about how their elementary school handled their child's sexual assault. It is the members of the public that are suffering with these disruptions, she said. Another department employee who asked not to be identified, fearing they could lose their job, said a number of the students' complaints are urgent. Many of these students are in crisis, the employee said. They are counting on some kind of intervention to get that student back in school and graduate or get accommodations. There are students who need help now, the employee said. And now the federal government is literally doing nothing. The department's new leadership has said publicly it plans to broaden the types of discrimination the department will investigate. Among the cases it is investigating is whether one all-gender restroom in a Denver high school discriminates against girls. The acting head of the OCR even took the unusual step of announcing the investigation in a press release, something previous administrations typically did not do. Let me be clear. It is a new day in America, and under President Trump, OCR will not tolerate discrimination of any kind, acting OCR head Craig Traynor said in the press release announcing that he had directed civil rights staff to investigate a Denver public school's bathroom because it appears to directly violate the civil rights of the district's female students. Denver school spokesperson Scott Pribble called the investigation unprecedented. He added, "This is not the first all-gender bathroom we have in school, but it is the first time an investigation has been opened by OCR. There are other girls' restrooms in the school. Only one was converted to an all-gender restroom after students lobbied school administrators to do so." Traynor again took a tough approach on Wednesday when he announced a new investigation into high school athletics groups in Minnesota and California, both of which have said they would not shut transgender women out of women's sports. The administration had already opened 3 similar investigations against other institutions for alleged violations of Title IX, the federal law that prevents gender-based discrimination in education programs, in response to the executive order Trump had signed to ban transgender women and girls from participating in women's sports. The states are free to engage in all the meaningless virtue signaling that they want, but at the end of the day, they must abide by federal law, Traynor said. The OCR also decided that it would investigate a complaint filed in August by the Equal Protection Project, a conservative nonprofit that alleges discrimination against white students. The Biden administration had not acted on the complaint, but new department leaders decided within days that it would proceed with an investigation. The complaint alleges that the Ithaca City School District in New York excluded white students by hosting an event called the Students of Color Summit. Cornell University professor William Jacobson, who founded the Equal Protection Project, said his organization has filed about 60 complaints over the years with the OCR, some of which remain under investigation. Asked whether he thought the change in administration helped fast-track the Ithaca complaint, he said, "I don't see how it could have hurt. We want even-handed enforcement, and we hope the department will be more aggressive than it has been in the past," Jacobson said. "If there are programs that exclude black students, we want the department to go after that. But I'm not aware of such programs." Ithaca school officials declined to comment. Catherine Lehman, who oversaw the OCR under former Presidents Barack Obama and Joe Biden, questioned the current administration's approach of issuing press releases to announce investigations. One announcement included a quote from a former collegiate athlete who has railed against transgender women in sports. "It's hugely political and suggests a conclusion before the OCR has even conducted an investigation," Lehman said. The agency, she said, is supposed to be a neutral fact finder. The agency appears to have ended its long-standing practice of making public a list of institutions that are being investigated and what type of discrimination is alleged. That was last updated January 14th, the week before Trump's inauguration. "We are continuing to report on the U.S. Department of Education. Are you a former or current Education Department employee? Are you a student or school employee impacted by changes at the department? You can reach our tip line on Signal at 917-512-0201. Please be as specific, detailed, and clear as you can." Molly Simon contributed research. And here's an article about Ray-Ban Meta glasses. The Eye Accessibility Report, Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses for Blind Users Guide. And this is can be played as a podcast, but I will go ahead and read. Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses combine style with advanced technology, offering unique benefits for blind and visually impaired users. These glasses are equipped with AI-driven features that provide hands-free accessibility, making daily tasks easier. However, it's important to understand their limitations and how they fit into your overall accessibility toolkit. In this guide, we'll explore the styles, key features, available commands, and important considerations when using these glasses. Where to buy and available styles. Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses are available at the Meta Store, Ray-Ban's website, and major retailers like Amazon and Best Buy. Prices start at $299, with additional costs for custom lenses such as prescription or polarized options. The glasses come in various styles, including the feminine Skylar, the classic Wayfarer, and the retro Headliners, each offering different color and lens configurations. Key features and accessibility commands. The glasses are equipped with a 12MP ultra-wide camera, open-ear speakers, and advanced AI. Here are some essential commands. "Hey Meta, look and tell me what you see." It identifies objects or people in view. "Hey Meta, look and give me a detailed description." Provides a detailed analysis of what the camera sees. "Hey Meta, look and tell me everything you see." Offers a comprehensive overview of all visible elements. "Hey Meta, look and read this." Reads text aloud, ideal for reading signs, menus, or documents. And "Hey Meta, translate this." Translates foreign text into your language. Limitations and features under development. While Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses offer many useful features, they currently do not support popular accessibility services like Be My Eyes or Aura. Meta is working on expanding the AI capabilities, but these features are not yet available. You may come across commands online that claim to offer extended functionality. However, results can vary. This is because Meta often rolls out new features gradually or tests them with select users, meaning not all commands will work consistently. What not to use these glasses for? These glasses are not designed to replace critical tools like canes or guide dogs. They are not suitable for recognizing medications, people, or performing tasks related to health and safety. The glasses' AI is not intended for precise navigation, identifying health hazards, or making decisions about personal safety. They should be viewed as a supplementary aid rather than a primary accessibility solution. Important tips for using Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses. Listen for the beep. After a command response, a beep indicates that Meta is ready for your next command. Experiment with commands. The AI's performance can vary, so it's important to try different commands and learn which works best for your needs. Be aware of limitations. Always use these glasses as an additional tool, not as a substitute for traditional mobility aids. Avoid using for health and safety tasks. The AI is not equipped to handle critical safety-related identifications or medical advice. Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses provide a stylish and accessible solution that enhances everyday experience for blind and visually impaired users. With continuous updates and evolving features, these glasses are poised to become even more functional. However, it's crucial to recognize their current limitations and use them in conjunction with traditional accessibility aids. Here's a notice about Brailler Service and Repair. Service fee, $140. There's a three-month limited warranty. And for refurbished Brailers, it's $350. And that is from Roberto Luna, Certified Brailler Repair Technician. And number is 323-244-3011. Email pintoluna74@gmail.com. Here's a fundraising activity. The Raleigh Wake Council of the Blind fundraiser. Raleigh Wake Council of the Blind is having a fundraiser. Do you like chocolate? Do you like nuts? Do you like helping out nonprofits? Well, here's a way you can do it all. The Raleigh Wake Council of the Blind, a nonprofit organization, is having a fundraiser. When you buy delicious treats from rwcb.terrillyn.com, again, that website is rwcb.terrillyn.com, you will also make a generous donation to the Raleigh Wake Council of the Blind. So please check out rwcb.terrillyn.com often. We thank you for your help. If you want to call, you must call Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The number is 1-800-323-0775. You must tell them you are calling with the Raleigh Wake Council of the Blind. Lawrence Carter, president of the Raleigh Wake Council of the Blind. And his phone number looks like it's 919-856-0034. Or maybe that. And there's a website, nccbinfo.org. Spread the word. Join GMSAA. Becoming a member of the Alumni Association is easy. Go to www.gmsaai.org and click on Join GMSAII to fill out the registration form. Print out the form and mail it to us with your $20 annual dues. It's that simple. Well, what is the purpose of GMSAA? 1. To promote goodwill among the blind and deaf communities. 2. To work with the Governor Moorhead School for the betterment of the student body. 3. To provide merit and charitable awards and scholarships to blind and deaf students who are pursuing vocational training or post-secondary education. and 4, to promote and encourage the education of blind and deaf children and adults throughout North Carolina. Who can join GMSAA? Any person who has attended the Governor Moorhead School, any campus of the North Carolina State School for the Deaf and Blind, any school that may be established by the state of North Carolina for the express purpose of educating blind or deaf children, or any person who is interested in helping the association. Coming soon to a newsstand near you, the next issue of the Alumni Connection will be distributed at the end of June of 2025. The deadline for submission of articles, committee reports, and announcements will be May 22nd of 2025. Let your voice be heard. Who's on the board of directors? President, Ricky Scott. Vice President, Robert Parrish. Treasurer, Tim Snyder. Secretary, Jonna Simmons. Assistant Secretary, Thelma Crumpler. Lonnie Cunningham, Margaret Carter, Annette Glenn, Janie Garland, Carla Smith, Donnie Best, and Susan Patterson. The Board of Directors meets quarterly. For updated information on meeting agenda items, meeting dates or times, or other information, please contact Dr. Ricky Scott, President, at 919-673-8300 or RickyScott09@gmail.com. And that's RickyScott09@gmail.com. Contribute to the Alumni Connection. The Governor Moorhead School Alumni Association reserves the right to edit for grammar, content, and formatting any material submitted for publication in this newsletter. All submissions must include the name of the author. And again, submissions can be emailed to RickyScott09@gmail.com. Well, that is the end of today's newsletter for the Governor Moorhead School Alumni Association. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Julie Eldridge, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. The Governor Moorhead School Alumni Association newsletter is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And we thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.